You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. I think the Republican Party has some good news coming. It looks like, if news reports are correct, that Indiana Governor Mike Pence will be Donald Trump's pick for the vice presidential nomination. Like I said yesterday, and I said this on a couple of shows more than a year ago, I forget exactly when, that my first choice for a candidate to run for president was Mike Pence. And this was before Donald Trump had announced, or most of the candidates had announced. I also said, although I knew that he wouldn't run, that I would be perfectly happy with Senator Jeff Sessions. Now, both those individuals are on Donald Trump's shortlist. There are other candidates, and I think it's important for a couple of reasons to I'll go through the candidates so far that as far as I'm concerned are the possible choices. Two, if Donald Trump did pick them, I would have stayed home. And that was Newt Gingrich and Chris Christie. They are both, in my mind, part of the progressive wing of the Republican Party, and for that reason alone, I would never vote for him. Now, I've said that I believe Donald Trump is a Democratic liberal. He was until he got religion or decided that he'd make a go of it. And then he had the immaculate conversion to being a Republican. And that has not sit well with the establishment in Washington, really both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Now, for those that are new listeners, I need to tell you where I'm coming from. I got involved in politics, let's say interested in politics would be a better word, because at the time I was too young to really do anything about it, couldn't even vote. But I am a Goldwater conservative. And the book that got me excited about it was The Conscience of a Conservative. And for people of my age, and that includes Donald Trump, they know of that book, and they know what happened to Barry Goldwater, because the moderates, the liberal Republicans, are forever telling us what happened. Goldwater lost in a landslide. I know that. No thanks to the establishment, Eastern establishment, the country club Republicans, really the Rockefeller Republicans at that point, that made sure that Barry Goldwater didn't have a chance. So I'm not surprised. No one was surprised when Lyndon Baines Johnson won. However, because of that, ever since, the Republican Party establishment, the leadership, especially the East Coast wing and the donor class, have held that against conservatives, as well as libertarians. We can't win with a conservative. We lost with Barry Goldwater. Well, excuse me. You seem to be rewriting history here. Ronald Reagan won twice, second time with a landslide. He did very well the first time as well. They kind of skipped that. They also skipped the fact that Ronald Reagan was a big supporter of Barry Goldwater. You see, the progressive wing of the Republican Party, they've had their winners. Richard Nixon, he had to resign in disgrace. And McCain didn't win. Dole didn't win. You see, if you truly want to win, you need a conservative on the ticket, preferably at the top. Well, this time, I'm sorry, as much as Donald Trump has impressed some people, I have reservations about him. I don't trust him. I don't trust Hillary Clinton at all or the Democratic Party, but I don't trust Donald Trump. And I've said on this show repeatedly, this election more than any other is all about trust. So how do you get people's trust? And I'm not a Republican anymore, by the way. I'm very much a classical liberal. I believe in limited government. I believe in fiscal responsibility. I believe in the Constitution. And today we have two political parties, both the Democrat and Republican Party, are big government parties. And that's the problem. We haven't had leadership in terms of a president, as well as in the House and the Senate, that are true conservatives, or if you will, classical liberals or libertarians. They're all for big government, and that includes Mr. Trump. Notice I have not heard one word, one position paper dealing with how in the world Mr. Trump and the Republican Party are going to balance the budget in 4 years, or for that matter, 8 years. Now, I don't expect anything from the Democratic Party. They just want to make the government bigger and bigger and raise taxes. That party is being abandoned today by lifelong Democrats that have had enough with the lies, the deceits of both parties. And that's the challenge for both of these candidates. The American people are angry, and that anger is being expressed with their votes for Donald Trump. It's a protest vote. And Donald Trump tapped into the one really issue that he could get broad-based support, and that is stopping illegal immigration into the country. The American people simply want the laws of the land to be enforced. And Donald Trump recently had made the point that he's a law and order candidate. Well, that remains to be seen. I was listening to him. I listen to talk radio. I sample a lot of talk radio. I mainly do it not because of the host, but because we're not equipped for call-ins. We don't have an audience nor the budget to really justify call-ins. So you notice in this show, there are no commercials and there are no call-ins. When I have my national syndicated commercial radio show, there will be call-ins and there will be interviews. But until then, it's yours truly for an hour or an hour and a half. And some during the year, some shows are 2 or 3 hours. And it's unscripted. I'm not reading anything. I'm giving you that background. So I listen to Savage. Normally, I don't listen to Mike Savage because when he's on, I'm preparing my show. But today I did. I knew Donald Trump was going to be on the show. He highlighted that early. So I listened. And I know he's a supporter of Trump. You know, Beck was a big supporter of Cruz. Savage was a big supporter of Trump. But to Mike Savage's credit, he calls it the way he sees it, and that's the way I do it. If I disagree with you, I will tell you. I'm very direct, to the point, similar to Trump, but I'm a little bit more diplomatic. I've been to charm school, if you will. And I am very honest to say, I don't care if you agree with me or don't, but I want you to make an informed decision. In other words, you have to do your own homework. And the reason I'm telling you that, I provide you a lot of supplemental information to complement my show. And the way you get to that information, my show prep or notes, is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And if you do that, you'll find articles, cartoons, photographs, a lot of YouTube videos. I give you a lot of information. There are pointers to a lot of information that I think would be useful. That doesn't mean I play the YouTube videos. Occasionally I will, and today I will play something that Mike Pence said. And Mike Pence is a noted conservative, a fiscally responsible conservative. He used to be on radio, and I thought rather early, before anyone really had announced, that he would make a great candidate for president. And I said it on my radio show. But he decided not to run for president, but to run for a second term as governor in Indiana. I think he would be an excellent vice president pick. I have no problems with Mike Pence. I have absolutely no problems at all with Jeff Sessions, and for that matter, Ted Cruz. Last show, I advocated that if Donald Trump would want a mandate, a landslide victory, he needs the advantages that Ted Cruz would bring to the ticket. And Ted Cruz wasn't my first, second, or third choice. The people that I favored either decided not to run or dropped out early or dropped out a little later. And I think if Trump had not thrown his hat in the arena and ran, at least one or two of the candidates that I favor might very well have beat Cruz. Trump was kind of the joker card that really mixed it up, and that's why we're talking about a Trump versus Clinton race. Now, I want to make very clear, I don't think this is a runaway at all. I think this could be a very, very close election. And I'm the biggest critic of the Obama administration and Hillary Clinton. I think she should have been indicted, and frankly, if convicted, go to prison. I knew that was never going to happen because at some point, mark my word here, Barack Obama is going to give her pardon, especially if she loses in November. And even if she wins in November, I wouldn't be surprised if he gives her a pardon. And she's just for bigger and bigger government, not fundamental change. In other words, continuing down the road to serfdom that we've been on. And it's not a road, it's a superhighway. It's a 4-lane highway today, and they want to make it an 8-lane highway. So I'm encouraged that Mike Pence is on the ticket. Now, it's not official, but there are leaks. Fox is reporting that Governor Pence has suspended his campaign for governor of Indiana, which is rather a clear indication that he knows that he's been picked. The announcement, the official announcement, will be in New York City tomorrow morning, and I fully think it will be Mike Pence. However, and this is an important thing to understand, two important things. Donald Trump prides himself in being a winner. Nothing wrong with that. Americans love winners. But he needs a mandate. And if he truly wants to play, I won't say play it safe, but if he wants a landslide mandate victory, I think a Trump-Cruz ticket would do that. People differ. But remember, Trump got about 45% of the popular vote, and Cruz, before he dropped out, his final total of the popular vote was about 25%. If you add it, that's 70%. The establishment Republicans are against him in the House and the Senate. What I call the political elitist establishment. They don't like Ted Cruz at all, and they certainly don't like Donald Trump. They've come to accept it, but there's still a small minority of Republicans that might try to steal it from Trump. I don't think they're going to succeed, but I wouldn't put it past them to make an attempt. Now, many of you that don't know history, let me point out that Taft, in 52, had the delegates to get the nomination until he got to the convention, and the East Coast establishment didn't want Taft. Taft was a conservative. They wanted Dwight David Eisenhower, who got the nomination and got elected twice. Mr. Trump is well aware of this, and that, unfortunately, is the history of the East Coast liberal Republican establishment. They always want conservative libertarian support when they have their man at the ticket, but when they have a conservative or libertarian at the top of the ticket, they'll stab you in the back. And that's the problem with both parties. They're both moved further and further to the left. This has been going on for really over 125 years. We had Teddy Roosevelt, the first Republican progressive candidate, and we had Woodrow Wilson, the first Democratic candidate, that won because Roosevelt split the ticket and Taft, who was president, lost because of Roosevelt, a progressive, spoiling it. And we got two terms of Woodrow Wilson. But we've also had Hoover, Nixon, both progressives. And the Democrats have had FDR, Lyndon Baines Johnson, and now Obama. You see, both parties are for big government intervention into the economy and abroad. They're interventionist. They believe the answer to all of society's ills and problems is another government program, a regulation, a tax. And that's why government has grown from less than 3% of the entire economy to over 20%. They don't produce anything. They take money from you and me. The answer, as far as they're concerned, is the government will solve society's problems. The problem is it doesn't. It makes them worse. And we've seen that in the decline of the family and the growth and the size and the scope and the role of the federal government. And the fact we have many states, it's not confined just to at the federal level, but the same thing in states and cities that are, for all practical purposes, bankrupt or fast becoming bankrupt. And it's international in scope. The welfare state is failing in Europe, and it's failing in the United States, and it's failing in states and cities across this land. The problem is incentives. People need incentives to work. Entrepreneurs need incentives to start a business, invest their time and money. And to the extent that we have strong economic incentives, we have a prosperous and growing economy. To the extent that we don't, we have exactly what we have today, a stagnating economy. Will the Democratic Party change that? No, it won't. They have the same old playbook, and as a result, people are leaving the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. That doesn't mean they won't vote Democrat or Republican, though, and that's an important point to keep in mind. You see, I don't have a party to support. I don't have a candidate, really, to support. There's no limited government candidate, and please don't talk about the Libertarian Party. They made a number of wrong choices. They're not worth talking about. I mean a successful, viable, gets 35-40% of the vote party. That's not going to happen until about 50% of voters out there say, I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat, I'm an independent. And when that happens, then some political entrepreneurs will start a third party that truly believes in limited government, believes in a constitutional republic. Today, we have a warfare and welfare state and an American empire. And all empires decline and fall. We're in the decline period, sad to say. Americans are calling for a change in direction, and to some extent, that's what this election is about. And that's why the so-called establishment candidates didn't get very far. Jeb Bush was supposedly going to be the Republican candidate. Well, he didn't do too good. As a matter of fact, he was a failure. The people are tired of both Bush and Clinton. American people deep down don't like political dynasties, period. Whether it's a Roosevelt, a Kennedy, a Clinton, or a Bush. And what's interesting about that list, they're all progressives, Democrats and Republicans. And that's why the American people are looking for an outsider, and that's why they're voting for Trump. He picked, though, the key issue. Because if you follow polls, and the only warning is it depends on how the question is asked. What the American people want is the laws of these lands in force, and in particular the immigration laws. Does it matter whether it's Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives, libertarians? There are exceptions to this. They believe in the rule of law, and they want the laws enforced. The problem is both the Democratic Party leadership and the Republican Party leadership are ignoring the will of the people. They're lying to them, deceiving them, trying to distract them from it. And they've had enough. And they're pushing back. Actually, they're shoving. And that's why I firmly believe Donald Trump is going to be elected. But the question is it going to be a close race or a landslide victory that would give the winner a mandate? I think right now with Pence, it's a close race as of today. Doesn't mean it has to be a close race. And I'm going to tell you why in a minute. Now, I want to play two clips of Mike Pence. One is from a radio show. He was giving an interview, being put on the spot. Let me play it for you. It's short.
Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, you're listening to Garrison with your host, Craig Garrison.
Okay. You've spoken to the candidates.
I have.
You've had a chance to think your way through this. Who are you voting for in the presidential primary?
It's clear this is a time for choosing. And all of America is looking to Indiana to make a choice. I have met with all three of the candidates as of about Tuesday of this week. And I want to say clearly, I like and respect all three of the Republican candidates in the field. I particularly want to commend Donald Trump, who I think has given voice to the frustration of millions of working Americans with a lack of progress in Washington, D.C. And I'm also particularly grateful that Donald Trump has taken a strong stand for Hoosier Jobs. When we saw Jobs in the carrier company abruptly announced leaving Indiana, not for another state, but for Mexico, I'm grateful I'm grateful for his voice in the national debate. And let me say, I've come to my decision about who I'm supporting, and I'm not against anybody, but I will be voting for Ted Cruz in the upcoming Republican primary.
You've got some, well, you were there at the same time for a little while. You know him personally. You know his education. You know his experience and his background and his constitutional roots. What is it that animates you to look in his direction the way that you do?
Well, it's a great question. You know, as you know, I'm a Reagan conservative. I literally, when I was a teenager, I was active in Democrat politics. And then I started hearing the voice of that former California governor who articulated an agenda of principles of less government, less taxes, traditional values, and a strong military. And I was drawn to the Republican Party. And throughout my career in Washington, D.C., and now here as governor of Indiana, those have been the principles that have really animated my service. And I've sought to support them at every turn, but also I've looked for opportunities to support men and women who have the courage to stand on those Reagan principles. And I see Ted Cruz as a principled conservative who's dedicated his career to advocating the Reagan agenda, and I'm pleased to support him.
Now, that was an interview on a radio show. I normally don't do that, but I wanted you to hear the fact that, and remember, at that time, Mike Pence had made a decision to run for a second term. And this was, I think, just before the Indiana primaries. He's being put on the spot. He's being very diplomatic about it. But he endorsed Ted Cruz. Doesn't surprise me at all. I would have expected him, given that he's not running for president, to endorse Ted Cruz. And that's what he did. But he was complimentary to Donald Trump. And he pointed out at one time he was a Democrat, and then he became a Republican. And because he's younger than me, he was attracted to the conservative / libertarian message of Ronald Reagan. And that's why he became a Republican. And he's noted for being a conservative, a movement conservative, a fiscally responsible conservative. And he comes from a state where if you look at the congressmen and their records, they're very much middle of the road. Some are, in terms of ratings, they're at the bottom. In other words, they look more like Democrats than Republicans. What I'm talking about is Conservative Review. I'll give them a plug. Reviews the records of voting records, both in the House and the Senate, of both parties, and rates them. Gives them a number grade and a letter grade. Ted Cruz gets a solid A. I think he's at 96-97%. There are a few in the Senate and the House that have 100s. And Jeff Sessions just barely made the cut. He got a B with 80%. As far as I'm concerned, if you're 80% or above, good. I can vote for you. If you get below 80%, it's going to be a tough choice. If you're in the 40s or 50s, you're not a conservative. You're not voting for issues that the way conservatives or libertarians would vote. That's the problem with Paul Ryan, and that's really the problem with a lot of congressmen, Republican congressmen, from Indiana as well as Wisconsin. I'm pointing this out because Paul Ryan gets an F. And what's the issue that's hurting him? I'll tell you what the issue is hurting him, and this is the problem with the Republican Party establishment. They're ignoring the fact that the American people want a stop, first of all, to the invasion of this country by illegal aliens. But they also want a rollback of that invasion. And the reason I'm going on about this, that's a hot-button issue, what I call either a hot-button issue or a deal-breaker. If you're wrong on that issue, I won't vote for you. I'm very much pro-life. If you're pro-abortion or pro-choice, however you want to describe it, I'll never vote for you. I'm strong on the Second Amendment. You get that wrong, if you're a gun grabber like Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, I'll never vote for you. If you're wrong on the immigration issues, I'm never going to vote for you. Those are deal breakers. And I really insist that they have fiscal responsibility, a basic principle or tenet of both the libertarian wing as well as the business fiscal conservative wing of the Republican Party. The problem is they couldn't balance a budget to save their lives. And do I think Donald Trump is going to do it? I haven't seen any position papers, any statement spelling out in detail how and when he will balance the budget. Not surprised, because I don't think he knows how. Doesn't have a clue. Not that Hillary Clinton does. She wants to make it worse. So I'm in a dilemma. Should I vote? If Donald Trump had picked Newt Gingrich or Chris Christie, I was staying home. They're deep down progressives. They're interventionists. I'm not. That's what's wrong with this country today. We have government spending is out of control. We have a warfare and welfare state. The government is spending more money than the people can support. We're burdening future generations. Not your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, and beyond. That's what's going on, and it will stop. It will implode sometime between 2025 and 2040, some in that neighborhood. That's when it hits the fan. That's the day of reckoning. And I'm waiting for someone to step forward and tell us, how are you going to balance the budget so the taxes that they collect are sufficient to pay the bills? Hillary Clinton doesn't have a plan like that. She wants to make it worse. It's a lost cause. I'm waiting for the Republican Party, Donald Trump in particular, to spell it out. That's the core problem today. Out of control government spending. It can't continue because it doesn't end well. And Donald Trump has made it very clear he doesn't want to touch the entitlement programs. He doesn't want to reform either Social Security and or Medicare. They have to be reformed or they go broke. Yes, there are a few things you can do to prolong the life of Social Security. And why I'm not a big supporter of Paul Ryan, at least he knows the problem. There's no way you're going to balance the budget without entitlement reforms. There's a lot of things that be can cut, and I'm for closing 8 to 10 departments. Then that should be one of the first things they do, and then put all the remaining departments, and there wouldn't be many, on a tight budget. But ultimately, where the big bucks are and what's driving the problem is both Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. Everyone talks about the national debt. I do. It'll be around $20 trillion by the time Obama leaves. He would have doubled it in 8 years, from roughly $10 trillion to $20 trillion. And yeah, you can blame Obama, and there's a lot of blame there to give. But the big drivers that's driving that deficit is the spending on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and now Obamacare. What they don't talk about is unfunded liabilities of over $100 trillion. The entire GDP, gross domestic product, of the entire world is around $70 trillion. I don't have the exact precise number. And our unfunded liabilities for our entitlement programs, and they're all estimates, you'll get very low numbers as well as high numbers, but they're north of $100 trillion. In other words, we can't pay those benefits. Do we have an immediate problem? No. But what is happening right now? Donald Trump is a good example of that. I'm on the leading edge of the baby boom generation, and guess who else is? Donald Trump. The baby boom generation was born in 1946 through 1964. They're the babies, children, of the World War II generation. And after World War II, starting roughly around 1948, for about 25 years, we had a booming U.S. economy. And what happened? People started families, and we had a boom, a baby boom. Now those people are either retired or about to retire. Some are still working. Some are still in their 50s. But more and more are reaching retirement age, whether it's 65, 66, 67, and become eligible for Social Security and Medicare. The estimates are there are about 10,000 people every day that are now qualified for Social Security and Medicare. That's the driver that's running these deficits up, and it's going to get bigger and bigger. There are roughly slightly under 75 million people. All of them are voters, slightly under 75 million, that are still alive, and you're going to need the baby boom vote. And if you don't get it, you're not going to win. Just recently, the generation that was born between 1980 and 2000, the millennial generation, is just slightly bigger than the baby boom generation. First time. The problem is young voters have a history of not voting. You better believe those people that are retired or approaching retirement or still working are concerned about Social Security and entitlement. This is not an easy issue. Donald Trump has signaled and made it very clear he doesn't want to really have any fundamental reform of entitlements. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Trump, but that doesn't float. It might get you elected, but you can't keep kicking the can down the road. You have to confront reality. At least Paul Ryan, and I have big differences with him, especially on the immigration area. He's part of the open borders crowd that really think that the answer is just open the borders and let people flood in. That's going to solve a number of problems. No, it's not. It's going to make the problems worse. Now, I'm going on about this for a reason. Many voters, and including me, don't really have a good choice. Call it voter's dilemma or the American dilemma. I don't have a candidate that really supports and has a political philosophy that, not necessarily identical, but similar to me. Americans know what's going on. They might be slow, but they're not stupid. They know that we need some fundamental reform here, and it's not being really addressed. If anything, they're avoiding it like the plague. So why Donald Trump is strong on certain issues, the Second Amendment, he is pro-life, at least that's what he says he is today. Strong on stopping or building the wall, hasn't changed that. And supposedly listening to his interview with Michael Savage today, that's in the Republican platform. Well, that's good, but I've been hearing about the wall, the fence, the double fence with the road for now for over 15 years. It just never gets really totally built. And you need a total complete wall. You don't have one for 10 miles and then stop, or one for 100 miles and then have holes in it. And even if you have the fence, you got to patrol it. But ladies and gentlemen, that is at best a third of the problem. And what do I mean by that? Oh, yes. About a third of the problem is people crossing into this country, U.S.-Mexican border, without presenting their papers because they're sneaking into the country. They're breaking into our country. And it's been going on for 15 to 20 years. And that is meant, and it continues today. It's happening today. So let's say Mr. Trump delivers and does a beautiful, big, powerful wall. Congratulations. You still got a patrol, and that would stop a lot of the invasion, as well as stop some of the drugs coming into the country. And the American people would applaud that. But that's only a third of the problem. The other third, there are two more, is the fact that every day people are flying into the country or coming by ship, maybe railroad, with visas. They're coming in the country legally, and then they're overstaying their visa. And supposedly we're getting a better system to monitor whether or not they leave. That's another part of the problem. Various estimates say it's 40%. Who knows? But what's the big problem that no one, including Mr. Trump, is not really talking about? And that's why we get back to the trust issue. Can I trust him? Because what's the magnet that is attracting people to break into our country, whether it's from Mexico, Central America, the Caribbean, South America, and other countries? And people flying here on student visas, business visas, tourist visas, and then overstaying. What's the magnet? It's not hard to understand. You don't need to be an economist or demographer to understand it. They're coming here for a better standard of living. They're coming here for a job, J-O-B, job. And because this problem has not been addressed, if anything, it's been ignored under Republican and Democratic administrations by the so-called political elitist establishment, the P's. The elites, the ruling class. I don't think they're elite, and I don't think they're very good as rulers. But they do have the power, and that power means they don't have to enforce the law. And we have a president that swore an oath that he would preserve, protect, and defend the United States Constitution. And what is he doing right now? He is enabling the invasion of this country by illegal aliens and not enforcing existing immigration law. And by the Constitution, there are only two ways to deal with a president that's acting like a tyrant or dictator, and that is either impeach him or cut off the money. And the Republicans, those gutless wonders, did neither. They're scared to be called a racist. No, they're gutless. And I'm glad Boehner's gone, and I'm waiting for the day that Paul Ryan is gone. Because you got to get the immigration question right, and you have to go after the 30 to 50 million illegals that are here today, of which anywhere from 20 to 30 million are working here and competing for jobs, benefits, education, medical services, with American citizens born, raised, and educated here. That's why the American people are incensed, outraged, angry, and they have the right to be angry, and I think their patience is running out. And ultimately, I think Donald Trump will win, and if he doesn't, there'll be other people 4 years from now that will take on Hillary Clinton. And I hope it's another political party. When 50% or more of the American people say they're independents, at that point, what will evolve is a new political party to take on both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And they will win and defeat both parties. Because this immigration issue is a job issue, it's a national security issue, it's a drug issue, and it's a crime issue. And the American people have had it up to here with liars in both parties, trying to ignore the legitimate concerns of the American people. That's why I still predict that Trump will win. The question is, will it be a landslide victory that he gets a mandate, or will it be too close to call? Now, I'm running out of time. I'm looking at the time. We still had some issues because we have a new computer system and we're working out some of the minor kinks. How can we change the direction of this country? I'm going to play the second clip of Mike Pence. This was at a town hall meeting several years ago. He's still a congressman, and he was asked this question.
Sir, my question was about a bill that you're co-sponsoring. I believe it's H.R. 25, the Fair Tax Resolution. And there's some bipartisan support for it, and there are some Democrats that are supporting it. Since the Republicans are now in the minority, is there any chance that any of the Democrats could possibly bring that to the floor?
Could they bring it to the floor? Sure. Would they pass it? No.
Okay.
But we couldn't get Republicans to pass it. I don't want to answer your question in a partisan context. I'm a guy, I know that taxes aren't very much on your mind today.
Sure.
if they're not, you can see Mr. Czarnecki and he can get you your papers for late filing. Look, a friend of mine called me today from South Carolina, a congressman. He says, I think I got this idea for a bill. I want to know if you think I'm crazy. And I said, okay, because my guys know, I'll tell them you're crazy. He said, I'm thinking we require every member of Congress fill out their own taxes. I said, you're crazy. But I told him I love the idea. I love the idea. Because I'll tell you what, I graduated Indiana University, Indianapolis Law School, passed the bar in tax law for Indiana and federal. First thing I did was hire an accountant, and I have never looked back.
Just use
TurboTax. It didn't work out for the other guy. you can't even trust TurboTax these days. But no, I'm going to tell you something. I have supported the flat tax proposal, but I recently did sign on to this fair tax proposal, which I expect somebody will attack me for someday, because it means if you did away with the income tax, it means you'd have a sales tax of anywhere from 15 to 20.
It's very easy to demagogue it.
It's easy to demagogue it. You're for raising taxes on groceries and stuff.
Yeah.
But you can take even a casual look at this idea and fall in love with it. Mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden, the federal government would have absolutely no business how you legally made money. None. In fact, We would move away from taxing income and savings, and we would go toward taxing consumption. And I've got some of my favorite law enforcement people in the room, and they know who they are, and I love them. But you don't even want to know how much money, underground economy, there is in this country that never pay taxes. But they buy stuff every day. And they buy big stuff. And so part of it's about capturing a whole economy that the current system just basically collects income taxes from honest Americans. And so if you're less than honest or extremely dishonest, you're outside that system. And maybe they'll catch you, maybe they won't. A fair tax basically catches everybody because, you know, you got to eat. You got to buy a house. You got to, right? And the other thing is it doesn't penetrate into where did you make your money and how much. And plus the simplicity of it, it's not a matter of filing, going through this awful experience. In a free society, the fact that we march 100 million Americans into tax preparers every year and make them pay a couple of hundred bucks for the privilege of filing all these papers with the federal, it's just crazy. Whereas how about a system where I just go about my business, I earn an honest living. And I'm not saying dishonest living. You go and earn an honest living, the government doesn't care how you made an honest living. Because at the point of sale, you're paying your sales tax. Now you go, well, wait a minute, what about that family that makes less than $35,000 a year? Well, part of this system, which was first proposed by Dick Lugar in 1996, part of this system is every quarter, every American, every consuming American out there gets a rebate from the government for an amount equal to their rebate of their first $35,000 in purchases. So you pay no sales tax on your first $35,000 in purchases if you're a married couple with one dependent. So for most Americans, it would represent a huge tax cut, much more disposable income, and you don't walk around all year wondering, am I a law-abiding citizen? Am I actually paying the taxes I'm supposed to pay, or is the government, you know? So, but I think there's got to be, I'm back to the Tea Party thing, there's got to be some major national movement driven principally by, in my opinion, by the principles of freedom. What is it to be in a free society? I'll tell you what, sometimes I think old George and John Adams and Thomas Jefferson would have writhed under the idea of a tax system. Because remember, we didn't tax income till the 20th century. Well, all of our taxes were consumption taxes before then. All of them. But I think the founders of this country would have gone, you want me to fill out a form and tell you what? I think George Washington probably would have fixed bayonets if somebody said, and I want to know how all the income that came into Mount Vernon, who you did business with, and what contract. He would have gone, get my gun. You know, that was the kind of stuff you read about in the Declaration of Independence. So I really do believe that it would take the American people rising up and embracing that principle, but it's the kind of fundamental tax reform I'd love to see.
He's not the only one that would love to see it, and that's probably the reason I wanted Mike Pence to run for president. I'm a big supporter of a broad-based consumption tax. If you're totally unfamiliar with it, there's a lot of good videos. I've included several in my notes for this show. Go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And I've included a few. I've given whole shows on it, and I have my own version of it. And I want to point out that when he was saying this, he was still a congressman. I think this is about 6-7 years ago. If Mr. Trump wants to win a mandate and win a landslide victory, he has what I would say is a good tax proposal. It's a solid B, but it's based on the same income tax system that we have. That system should be thrown in the trash can because today, and Mike Pence alluded to it, and the numbers have been going up, up, and up. Today, the estimates are that the American people, primarily large corporations, but businesses, have to pay about $500 billion. That's half a trillion dollars, $500 billion in what's called compliance costs. That's a fancy way to fill out the tax returns. And Donald Trump knows this. He has one that's several feet tall and pays a lot of money for someone to prepare it. Do you think Donald Trump prepares his tax returns? I don't. Most of the very wealthy can hire the help. You see, it's time to do away with that progressive idea that is funding this giant, massive mess that we're in, and that is the income tax. That doesn't mean I'm against government. I'm for a limited government. I'm not for an American empire, and I'm certainly not for a warfare and welfare state that we have now that is taking this country down the drain and will ultimately bankrupt us. We can't year in, year out run deficits of $400 billion, $500 billion, or a trillion. First year Obama was in office, it was $1,400 billion. $1,400 billion. is $1.4 trillion. This year, it'll be probably between $500 and $600 billion. But it's going to get worse and worse and worse because the major drivers are entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare, and also the several hundred welfare programs that we have. We need fundamental reform in the welfare area, as well as entitlements. That's where the money is. That's what's driving us broke. That's why not only are we going into debt and running up massive unfunded liabilities that we never can pay. That's the problem. Is either candidate or party talking about it? This is a subject that they don't want to talk about. Either controlling and balancing the budget, but more importantly, fundamental reform of our tax system. See, under my Fair Tax Less proposal, which is based on the fair tax, I made two or three major changes. It's not revenue neutral, but neither is Donald Trump or Ted Cruz, by the way. In other words, it's going to raise less money than the current system. The American people need a tax cut, especially our corporations. We need a pro-economic growth agenda. And what could bring investment back into this country, jobs back into this country, create wealth, is where you have a system that neither taxes income or labor nor tax capital. My fair tax version of the fair tax, I call fair tax less. You would replace all federal taxes. In other words, you would do away with the income taxes on personal, corporate, estate, gift. There's no alternative minimum tax. There are no capital gains taxes. All federal taxes are eliminated and replaced with one single tax, the fair tax less. And why it looks like a sales tax, I'll give you briefly my bread example to make it very clear. Today, when you buy a loaf of bread, I go to the local Kroger store, and for 99 cents, a dollar if you will, we'll round it to a dollar, I buy a loaf of bread. In that price of the loaf of bread, is roughly 23% of that is taxes. And that's anything you buy. They're embedded in that price. It's a cost of doing business is paying your taxes. They're already there. We're replacing all of those taxes, doing away with them, abolishing them, as well as abolishing the IRS, because you won't need them. There are no more income taxes on businesses, on individuals, partnerships, gone, gone, gone. And what you need to understand, there are no more payroll taxes for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, gone. And you need to understand the most regressive tax today are the payroll taxes for those entitlement programs. So you replace it with one tax that everybody has to pay. And they pay it when they buy a new good or service. They pay it at the cash register. That's how it's collected. No more tax returns, and your paycheck, your gross paycheck, is your paycheck. Now, what's the rate? Fair tax less, mine is 20%. That's the inclusive rate. It's included in the price of the goods. That's why it's 20%. So, to keep it simple, no change in prices. That loaf of bread is still a dollar. This is not an additional tax. It's a replacement tax. 20% of that dollar that you pay, less a small fee, goes to the federal government. That's the bad news. Everyone pays the same rate, from the poorest to the richest. Now, what's the good news? Because I know that the Democratic Party, they'll demagogue it. And that gentleman, well, Pence pointed out, it's easy to demagogue. But here's something that it's hard for them to really come back at you. They'll come back at you and say, well, it's a regressive tax. Well, so is Social Security. But why isn't the fair tax a sales tax? Many people, including Pence, just referred to it as a sales tax. I regard it as consumption tax, but there are 47 states that have sales tax, including Texas. In Texas, it's 8.25%. It's being collected today in at least 47 states, to my knowledge. It could be more. The ones that don't have a sales tax have an income tax, and some have both, like New York City, State, and California, run by the liberal progressives of both the Democrat and Republican Party. What's unique about the fair tax, or my version of it, fair tax less? There's a tax prebate. That addresses the fact that the criticism of the fair tax, well, it's not progressive. Yes, it is. Everyone pays the same rate. When they buy a new good or service, note, I didn't say used. You don't pay any taxes on investments. You know, whether it's your home or your mutual fund or 401k, if you do well in your investment, none of it goes to the government. You need to understand that. So if you sell your house, it's a used house. You're not going to pay any capital gains on the gain, assuming you sell it for more than you purchase it. It would lead to a real estate boom, folks. Because some say, well, what about the real estate interest deduction? You don't need it. We don't have an income tax. You need to get an attitude adjustment here. What's the prebate? I'm giving you my version of it. No pride of authorship here. And remember, a lot of the videos online are somewhat dated. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. This is not a new idea. And it has support in the Congress, both in the House and the Senate, both Republicans and Democrats. The problem is we haven't had a champion of the fair tax. We need a president to get behind it, and Mike Pence understands it. You see, I used to be a big supporter of the flat tax, but then I saw something that's better. And when I see something better and I'm persuaded about it and study it, and believe me, I studied it frontwards and backwards, and I could see ways you could make it simpler and easier to understand. So my prebate's very simple. Every American citizen doesn't depend on your income. Every American citizen, I'm underlining citizen here, not illegal aliens, not visitors, legal or illegal. But if you were born, raised, educated here, you're an American citizen. Once you turn 18 years old, in other words, you're an adult, every month you will receive from the federal government a tax prebate of $1,000, a check for $1,000. So in a year, you will receive 12 checks, a total of $12,000. You like that? I like that. Everyone I've explained this to likes it. Some have said, Ray, I think you're being a little too generous. I said, yes and no. It's very difficult to live in New York City, Honolulu, San Francisco. You got to take into account where you're living. But I want to make it as general and simple as possible. Everyone gets that prebate check, and that's to pay for what? The taxes on the necessities or the essentials of living. Everyone needs to eat. Everyone needs food. They need clothing. They need a roof over their head. And they need transportation and insurance. So the government, gives everyone an adult, mails it in your checking account or to a card. That's a detail, folks. And it doesn't matter whether you're single, married, or how many kids you have. If you're 18 years old, you as an individual will receive every month from the United States government $1,000. So if you're a married couple, each of you will get $1,000. Doesn't matter whether you have no kids or 10 kids. We're not trying to encourage marriage. We're not trying to encourage having babies. We're out of that game. If you're an adult U.S. citizen, you get $1,000, $12,000 a year. Why $12,000? That would pay the taxes on your first $60,000 of consumption. At 20% of $60,000 is $12,000. Anything above $60,000, you're still going to pay the taxes. Remember, when you go to the cash register, you're going to pay that price of bread, which, for example, is a dollar. No more income taxes or payroll taxes. It's still going to be a dollar. You're going to be paying that 20 cents. But to deal with the criticism that it's unfair, the incidence would be higher on low income, that deals directly with it. In other words, if let's say you earn $60,000 and you spend every single penny of it, that means you paid no taxes on it. You pay it, but you get that prebate. It's an offset, is the best way to think of it. But in every single good you buy, you're still going to be paying 20%. In other words, anything you buy that's new, you're going to pay the tax. But you will offset that up to $60,000. And Mike Pence is right. There's a great underground economy. Just got the signal. I got to cut it off. I didn't really want to spend a lot of time on the fair tax list, but you need to understand it. And the reason I'm promoting this is we need a game changer. We need to get this economy growing again on the right track. That will attract investment not only from U.S. corporations abroad, but from around the world. Because we would be the only country in the entire world that doesn't tax capital or labor. This is a strong pro-economic growth tax plan. It's simple. It's fair. It's transparent. Everyone understands it. And once it gets into effect, the American people will defeat any politician, Democrat, Republican, Independent, any politician that would take us back to that progressive income tax that's destroying this country. Mike Pence is for the fair tax, as are other Democrats and Republicans in Congress. We're looking for a president that will get behind it. I hope it's Donald Trump. That's why I'm pleased to learn, unless he changes his mind, that he's going to pick Mike Pence as his candidate. Because Mike Pence has studied this. He has the expertise. He understands this is a terrific idea. I don't care about the details. The details can be worked out. But everyone with an open, objective mind that studies it, and every time I've explained my version of it, people love it. Sign me up. Maybe we can elect a president that understands this is a game changer. This is a winner not only at the ballot box, but it's a winner for the American economy. We would get a boom in business starts, investments, and would get unemployment rates under 3%. And people around the world would bring their factories back to the United States. In other words, to summarize it, in the slogan of Donald Trump, it would make America great again. But more importantly, we would have a peace and prosperous economy, not a warfare and welfare state. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.